This is JimBinbo.com e-news number 293, the 31st of March, 2011. This e-news is read by JimBinbo's text-to-speech robot, Jimbo, or Jimbot, if you prefer. As usual, there are 5 items, and 3 feedbacks in this issue of e-news. Item 1. Invenzy's CEO fired just before year-end. This Binto prediction was easy. Invenzy's CEO Ulf Henriksen would be booted before too long. Ulf became CEO in 2004. He simply flailed around with a series of bad decisions which kept the company spiraling downwards. The weblogs were packed with a plethora of problems. Clearly something would break by fiscal year-end, March 31, 2011. A week before, the news spilled in with bursts of blogs. Ulf was gone. There was no real explanation other than the usual sweet nothings. Board Chairman Sir Nigel Ward appeared to be in command. Finance Director Wayne Edmunds was interim CEO. Clearly the company will be sold. Buyers include Siemens, reported to be ready with a big war chest. ABB, Honeywell, Emerson, and 2 Chinese firms. No offers yet, but they're all milling around, waiting for someone to start the bidding. Stay tuned. Item 2. Useless college degrees. For a half century or more, Americans have sent their kids to college to prepare them for higher paying jobs and a better life than their parents. Now, a new report from Harvard Graduate School of Education argues that greater emphasis on vocational training, apprenticeships, and technical job training outside of a formal college setting would better serve America's young people. The study says that going to college is not the right route for many, especially young men. In Europe, and especially Germany, which is a model for growth, students move on different tracks, depending on their abilities and inclination. They place more emphasis on vocational training in high school, teaching adolescents how to use their skills in the real world. We need to fix American education, particularly the inequalities Americans face at the starting line. Bright children from poor families are less likely to get the right education, and the much less intelligent children of the affluent. This represents a huge waste of the country's human potential. Item 3. The web is dead. Long live the internet. The cover of Wired magazine, August 2010 issue, proclaimed, "The web is dead." The open World Wide Web was free. But it was out of control. Simpler, more effective closed applications. Apps are what everyone is using. I wake up and check email on my iPad, that's an app. During breakfast I read the New York Times, and then my messages on Facebook and Twitter, more apps. I listen to a podcast. From my home in San Diego, I look in on my son's family in Florida via Skype, and my grandson shows off his new skills with his saxophone. More apps. During the day I listen to background music selected from my favorites by Pandora, while I write my e-news. Then I maybe watch a movie on Netflix, via my Google TV box. I spend the day not on the web, but the internet. The big shift has been from the wide open web to semi-closed platforms that use the internet for transport, but not the browser for display. This is driven by the rise of the smartphone model of mobile computing. This is what consumers are choosing, because these closed apps just fit better. The information comes to them, they don't have to find it. It's easier for consumers to use, and easier for suppliers to make money. Today, the applications that account for most traffic are email, peer-to-peer file transfers, company private networks, machine-to-machine communications, Skype calls, online games, iTunes, voice over IP phones, iChat, and Netflix movie streaming. Most of these internet applications are closed and proprietary. Much as people like freedom and choice, they also like things that just work reliably and seamlessly. And they pay for what they like. Say, have you looked at your cell phone bill lately? Item 4. The killer apps of progress. While we are discussing apps and the super apps which some call killer apps, here's a concept I like. The apps that made America great but are now being used in other countries to catch up. The Harvard historian Niall Ferguson writes that for several centuries the West had patented 6 killer applications that set it apart, the secret sauce of Western civilization. 1. Competition. 2. Science. 3. The rule of law and private property rights. 4. Modern medicine. 5. The consumer society. 6. The work ethic. Japan was the first to use those apps, and, within a few decades, after their defeat in the war, their economy jumped to become number 2, second only to the US. Now China and India and several others are using the killer apps and growing fast. America's success has come because of policies and developments of the 1950s and 60s. The interstate highway system, massive funding for science and technology, a public education system that was the envy of the world, generous immigration policies. The U.S. remains the world's largest economy, has the largest military by far, the most dynamic technology companies, and an entrepreneurial business climate. But, at the same time, it is diluting the things that made it great, and is steadily falling behind. This slippage is because we are tackling our economic problems politically. Politicians are tuned to those with cash to spend. The whole system is geared to preserve current subsidies, tax breaks, and loopholes. America's decades-old investments made it great. Today, the country is stuck in a morass of political infighting to preserve the past. This is causing us to slip while the world is catching up. Item 5. 3D manufacturing. A new manufacturing technology is emerging. Three-dimensional printing makes it as cheap to create single items as it is to produce thousands, and thus undermines economies of scale. It will have as profound an impact on the world as the factory did. A 3D printer works by using a computer to create a series of cross-section slices. Each slice is then printed one on top of the other to create the 3D object. 3D printing has many big advantages. It cuts costs by getting rid of production lines. It reduces waste enormously, requiring as little as 1/10 of the amount of material. It enables the production of a single item quickly and cheaply. 3D printing is already competitive with plastic injection molding for runs of up to 1,000 items, and this number will rise as the technology matures. Today, the 3D process is possible only with plastics, resins, and some metals, with a precision of around 0.1 millimeter. It is currently used just by hobbyists, and in a few academic and industrial niches. Since 2003, there has been large growth in the sale of 3D printers. A basic 3D printer, also known as a fabricator or fabber, now costs less than a laser printer did in 1985. But 3D printing is spreading fast. The technology will improve and costs will fall. It's impossible to forecast the long-term impact of 3D printing. But the technology is coming, and it is likely to cause a significant disruption. This will be a major inflection point of progress. As usual, there are 3 feedbacks in this issue of e-news. Feedback 1. Responding to the last e-news issue about technology eliminating factories, David Bell sent these insights. David writes, "I think when we talk about manufacturing, we're invoking the factory metaphor. Why do we want to foster manufacturing as a factory here again? We assume that this would bring high-value employment. Statistics over the last 30 years overwhelmingly indicate the opposite. So it wouldn't bring back jobs. I'd like to propose a different answer. We want manufacturing because we want to design and create our own future, to build a world around us that we're proud of, a world that affirms our values and aspirations. Manufacturing is powerfully human and creative. The objective is to design and create a more successful world for ourselves. That's something to take pride in, something to work and sacrifice for. That's how we started, out there on the beach trying to get that plane in the air, because we wanted to prove that we could fly. If we've lost that, if that's gone, then that's the problem. Not factories. I worry that we've lost our way. Feedback 2. Andrew Bond from the UK insists that automation won't eliminate jobs. Says Andrew. I go along with your analysis of the impact of the extension of automation into areas beyond manufacturing, but I don't believe you're right about the long-term consequences. This is the same argument as the one they had about what would happen when the spinning Jenny replaced the spinning wheel, or the power loom and flying shuttle replaced the hand loom. You remember the dire predictions in the mid to late 70s of the impact of microprocessors. In the UK currently, despite the impact of automation, the current recession, the export of manufacturing jobs to the Far East, and the worryingly high level of unemployment, in particular youth unemployment, there are more people employed than there have ever been. Many are doing things that weren't even heard of 20 years ago. Whoever thought, for example, that you could make a business out of washing cars by hand in preference to by machine? Yet today there are literally thousands of outlets in the UK doing just that. Just because we can't imagine where the new jobs will come from doesn't mean that they're not coming. Feedback 3. Ken Haywood is worried about the disappearing middle class. Says Ken. Yours is a dire view of a middle class future. As the middle class goes, so goes society. We see a widening gap between the wealthy and everyone else. Will the economy reach equilibrium, or implode? The wealthy continue to increase productivity with more automation and fewer workers. With fewer workers employed, the economy will reach a point where there are not enough consumers with sufficient means to purchase all the products produced. Can I conclude that companies producing those products will eventually implode for lack of revenue? So, what is the long-term outcome? Something must give. Government welfare. How about industrial welfare? Is that institutional socialism? I suspect that there will be a return to localization, at least for the basics of life. I can see some of that already in the small enclaves of America. Small business and entrepreneurship will keep the fabric of society from tearing apart. Well, that's this issue of e-news. Please send us your feedback. Send your email to jim@jimpinto.com. Thank you.